You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Could you possibly explain a bit of the context surrounding the protests that have already been happening in India and what they're about?
Yeah. Okay. This has been ongoing for a couple of years, but to keep it really, really brief, the government of India amended the Citizenship Act, which is in the Constitution of India, where, you know, everybody, where they consider citizenship for migrants coming into India. To what they did was they amended it to illegal migrants, this is into quotation marks, illegal migrants from Afghanistan, Bangladesh and Pakistan before 2014 will be considered for citizenship of India, except Muslims. Now, you have to bear in mind that all of these three countries are Muslim countries. And so if there are any refugees, I would not call them illegal migrants, I would call them refugees. If there are any refugees coming into the country, into India, they're coming there for a reason. And to discriminate just based on religion is just completely unconstitutional and, you know, it's discriminatory. The Constitution of India is a secular and progressive document. The preamble contains the word secular, and everybody is treated as an equal. So they've amended this. That is just one, which is the Citizenship Amendment Act. But they've also implemented something called the National Register of Citizens, first implemented in the state of Assam, which is in northeast India, to identify Muslims and Bangladeshi illegal immigrants. And they will be, you know, there will be a register, and if they're not on that register, then they're deemed illegal and they'll be put into a detention center. And what has happened is that this basically a lot of people who've lived there forever and who don't have documents. I mean, if you're in a remote village somewhere in deep rural area, how are you going to present documents? You're just born there and you die there. So how do you present any documents? But if you don't have documents, then you're illegal and therefore you'll be picked up and put in a detention center. So it's changing the fabric of Assam. It's putting in more Hindus in there, changing the indigenous structure of Assam, changing the culture of Assam, and so people have been protesting over there. This national NRC is going to be implemented across India now, which is going to cause a lot of dislocation, and you know, people are just going to become stateless. And the third thing that has happened is that they're going to start something called a National Population Register, where people will go, you know, these officials will go from house to house documenting people and asking for papers. They're not yet sure which papers, because your passport is not eligible, your birth certificate is not eligible, your is something called an Aadhaar card, which is connected to all the government services. That is not eligible, so they've not actually told us what is eligible for the, you know, what is a legal document. And going from house to house basically is just, you know, it's not really, it is a census activity, but this is not really a census activity. And so all of that has caused a lot of, you know, unrest in India, because people think this government, which has got a fascist ideology, is converting this secular, pluralistic nation into a Hindu nation, you know, a patriarchal Hindu nation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could you talk about who comprises the government at the moment a little bit and what the ruling ideology is?
So the government of India, the Prime Minister of India is Narendra Modi. The Home Minister of India is Amit Shah, and the Bharatiya Janata Party, or the BJP, is the majority party in this government, and they were voted. India has the first past post system, and so they got majority votes, and they were re-elected into government just recently last year, September, perhaps, I forget the exact month. And so they're a party that comes from a philosophy of Hindutva, which is So Hinduism is the religion, and this is this party is a philosophy which is Hindutva, which is that, you know, this is the superior. Hinduism is a superior religion. Hindus are superior to everybody else. You know, they it's very race based as well. So the Hindus like to, that particular belief likes to think that they come from the Aryans or Aryans, which is very similar to what the Nazis thought. And in fact, the founders of all the parties that has now come up as the BJP, they all idolized Adolf Hitler, and they believed that the German way, the Nazi German way, was the best way.
So the Citizens Amendment Act and the register which accompanies it, has this appeared alongside any other legislation which is of concern to the public? Because what you're kind of describing sounds really scary, and as though it's sort of a shift, like you said, redefining the social fabric of a nation. Have there been other pieces of legislation which have been passed that sort of complement the Citizens Amendment Act?
Yeah, so the, like I mentioned, the NPR and the NRC, you know, short forms that I mentioned, the National Register of Citizens and the National Population Register. In total, they are just going to deem illegal a lot of people in India, and overtly you could say that it's an Islamophobic, you know, all three pieces of legislation are Islamophobic, but they also affect the poor people, they affect the Dalit community, they affect women, they affect a lot of people who do not fit into their worldview. It'll affect somebody like me, perhaps, who, you know, I'm a New Zealand citizen, but I have something called an overseas citizenship of India, which means I can come and go as I please. It could affect me because I could be deemed anti-national and not allowed into the country. Yeah, and the other things that have happened, which, I mean, these are overtly, you know, citizenship-related legislations, but there's been a slow erosion of justice over a period of time where, you know, Kashmir had special status in the Constitution of India under Article 370, and the government has, you know, abrogated that article in August last year, August 2019. And after maybe more than 160 days now, they've just partially lifted blanket internet ban in Kashmir. So, you know, instead of, I mean, Kashmir has had a really turbulent past, and there was an exodus of Kashmiri pundits who are Hindus from the state, which is really a terrible thing. But instead of reconciliation and healing, what we see is punishment and, you know, sort of genocidal language being used. And while while the rest of India, perhaps, because Kashmir has been such an issue, the rest of India perhaps never paid attention to that, thinking that, well, you know, they're troublemakers anyway, all the Kashmiri Muslims. But just a couple of, I think last month, the Supreme Court passed a judgment on a piece of land that held a masjid that was, broken down by BJP and its Hindu affiliates in 1992, 6th of December 1992. And that's been ongoing because they believe that there was a Hindu temple underneath that. This is a 400-year-old structure, the masjid, and that is a mosque. And they decided that this is, you know, suddenly they decided there was a temple underneath, and so they broke it down. And so there's been court case after court case. There's been riots after riots in India over this issue.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court actually, it was a really weak judgment where they said, well, yeah, there's no proof that there was a temple underneath this structure. However, we are giving the land to the Hindutva people. So I think it's been building up this erosion and this, you know, being called anti-India if you raise your voice, any critique that happens. So the anger has been building up. Plus, the economy is at its worst over the last 45 years. Since 45 years, I would say.
Wow.
The economy is at its worst since 45 years. Unemployment rates are high. There's been job losses. A lot of state structures being privatized. And there's no plan. I mean, you could say that, you know, this, you want to build a free market capitalist society where, you know, individual responsibility is what it should be. But that's not even the plan. The plan is just haphazard, whatever comes into their brain, because ultimately the aim is to have a Hindu nation. So, I mean, if people die of hunger, who cares? You know?
Wow.
That's
a lot to take in, and it sounds like it's a really ripe sort of breeding ground for injustice. And you know, as someone that doesn't have a comprehensive understanding of the political situation in India, it's really concerning to hear these things, you know, especially because it's, a part of it sounds like history is sort of playing itself back. In ways, with the desecration of sacred sites, with the door-to-door knocking, the registers, and the amendment to the Citizenship Act, like determining who is and who isn't valid. It's all very, very scary stuff. I'd just like to ask what the response from the community has been like. How have people responded to this legislation being put forth and these new changes to citizenship and to the register? What have people been doing? Have they been taking action in any way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this simmering discontent over a period of time that became visible when students from the Jamia Millia Islamia University in Delhi, they protested. It was a peaceful protest inside on campus, but the police entered the campus and they were sort of non-state agents, for want of a better term, sanctioned by the state, but non-state agents who vandalized the library and, you know, beat up students. And that just blew up because other universities, students at other universities started protesting. So after JMI was vandalized, another university called the Aligarh Muslim University, which is, you know, prestigious university. All the three universities that have been targeted are prestigious universities, old universities, very intellectual breeding ground, you know, breeding ground for intellectual and critical thinking. Mm-hmm. So JMI was targeted first because they protested peacefully. Then Aligarh Muslim University, who stood up in solidarity, they were targeted next. And then the Jawaharlal Nehru University, which is in Delhi as well, there's been ongoing targeting by the BJP government of this particular university for a really long time. It's a bastion of socialists and leftist thought. You know, if you sort of want to stereotype them.
Yeah.
So the student leaders have been, you know, targeted by calling them the anti-India gang and the breakup, you know, there's a word phrase called Tukde Tukde gang. Tukde means pieces. So this is the, you know, the pieces gang that wants to break up India kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so just in the first week of January, masked goons entered this campus and they beat up the students. One of the student leaders was beaten up. She started bleeding. You know, she got a deep gash on her head. And that's when I think people just really got upset because, you know, middle-class India, as long as it's not affecting their lives, it'll just carry on, which is what middle-class people all over the world do.
Yeah.
You know, everything is top-high until it starts coming to their doors. But they have children who are students and who are enlightened and have a world view, and they feel disrespected and they feel trampled upon. And so it's just erupted across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Another place in Delhi called Shaheen Bagh, where they have this 24-hour sit-in. It's just full of Indian women. You know, the youngest protester a couple of days ago was a 20-year-old baby.
Whoa.
And the oldest one was, the mom had the baby and she took her to this place. And the oldest one is a 90-year-old woman, you know. These are largely Muslim women who would not step out because they didn't feel the need to step out. But this is their place in India being questioned. And I think they need to stand up, and then everybody else is allying with them, you know. We have to support each other.
I've read that things have actually extended as far as the policing of social media posts, and people have actually been detained for posting things on like sites like Facebook and Instagram that have been deemed as un-Indian. Is that correct? Wow.
That is correct. I mean, that's largely happened in India, but you know, I mean, there was this one person who, before we had our first, we had a rally on the 21st of December and to protest against this, and there was this one person, Indian person, who posted on his Facebook, who lives in New Zealand, who posted on his Facebook page publicly to say that, this is an anti-India activity and the High Commission of India is watching these people and their privileges will be cut. So I wouldn't be surprised if I'm being, you know, I'm on the radar.
Is there anything you'd like to say in the event that you are?
I'm sure I am. I actually wrote to the Indian High Commission of India last week, and I also wrote to MFAT and the Prime Minister's Office of the Chief Executive, you know, pointing out that, okay, so, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that you do not surveil citizens for potential anti-whatever activities that do not suit that current agenda. So this is specifically to the High Commission of India. Are you actually allowing another Indian to threaten, an Indian to threaten another Indian, saying that your privileges will be cut? Or are you actually, you know, this means that it's not just in New Zealand, you're potentially doing it to Indians all over the world. And are you just going to, you know, cut their privileges to visit India? And it's really not a comfortable place to be in, because you're actually saying that we cannot exercise our rights in this country, in a secular democracy, to protest something that's happening in India. So, you know, under the Bill of Rights, we can do this protest without actually being... So
there's a march happening in Auckland this Sunday, the 19th of January. What can you tell me about this march, and where is it leaving from, and where is it heading to?
So we're having this march to condemn the government, the fascist government of India, and to stand in solidarity with all the students and all the protesters back in India. We will meet up at 12 noon at Jean Batten Place. And then we'll slowly make our way up to Myers Park. It's going to be songs and chants. There's not going to be any speeches. What we want to make visible is this ongoing unrest in India and the reason for it. And we would like the government of New Zealand to take notice of this and condemn this fascism, because it's very much related to those white supremacy and the kind of Islamophobia and hatred that led to Christchurch, you know, 15th of March. Which is why we're having this march. Oh, 15th of March.
What sort of response would you like to see from the government?
We would like Prime Minister Ardern to condemn this fascism and to to say that this is, you know, an erosion of democracy. It's an acknowledgement, I would say, of ongoing unrest and how it is going to affect South Asia geopolitically. And ultimately, it's going to land up at the doorstep of Aotearoa, isn't it? And we don't want that. We want this government of India to stop discriminating against its own people based on religion.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.